Local news, culture, and NPR. Good morning to you, ladies. Heather?
Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, school merger update. That merger of the Livingston Manor and Roscoe School Districts is on a tight timeline. It got tighter when it was postponed due to whether that Board of Education election was postponed, that is. The new board will make key decisions for the unified district, including selecting a name, mascot, school colors, and grade configurations. We'll chat with Superintendent John Evans for the latest. The secret to living longer? Join a club. The documentary Join or Die examines the decline of civic engagement in America. It's screening this weekend at the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance. We'll learn more about the film's central message about promoting a healthy democracy by participating in organizations of all kinds. Plus, Moving Toward Health with Maggie Fitzpatrick and Art Sisters Abby and Heather's collaborative exhibition at Arts Nest. First, the news.
On Corva Kuhlman, Secretary of State Marco Rubio has concluded a day of discussion with his Russian counterpart. The teams talked about moving toward a peace agreement for Ukraine. But Ukraine was not invited to the talks. Neither were European officials. Rubio says there will have to be concessions to end the war in Ukraine. Trump administration officials have previously said Ukraine cannot get back all the territory that Russia invaded and that Ukraine cannot join NATO. These are both key Russian demands the Trump administration is agreeing to. Maryland Democratic Senator Chris Van Hollen says Ukraine has also rejected President Trump's demand for much of Ukraine's key minerals.
Can you imagine FDR in the middle of World War II saying to Churchill, you know, we're not going to continue to help you until you turn over half of your coal and mineral reserves? That's not how you behave when you want to support a friend who's under attack by an authoritarian like Putin.
He spoke to CNN. Hamas in Gaza says it will hand over the bodies of 4 Israeli hostages on Thursday and 6 living hostages on Saturday. Israel had asked Hamas to speed up the hostage releases. NPR's Daniel Estrin has more from Tel Aviv.
Hamas says on Thursday it will give Israel the bodies of 4 hostages, including those of the Bibas family. Shiri Bibas and her 2 young children, aged 4 and nearly 1 when they were captured, have long been feared dead. On Saturday, Hamas says it will release all 6 living hostages it had committed to freeing by the end of February, including 2 hostages held in Gaza for about a decade. Next week, Hamas is expected to give Israel 4 more hostages' bodies. After that, 59 hostages will remain in Gaza, nearly half of them confirmed dead. In return, Israel says it's allowing mobile homes into Gaza for those whose homes were destroyed, plus heavy machinery to retrieve bodies buried under rubble. Daniel Estrin, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
Stocks opened lower this morning after the long holiday weekend. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average slipped about 130 points in early trading.
Investors in Constellation Brands may be raising a glass after news Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway has taken a stake in the company. Constellation sells spirits, wine, and beer, including Mexican imports Corona and Modelo. Its shares had taken a beating on President Trump's threats of new import tariffs, so Buffett may have gotten a bargain. Southwest Airlines is cutting its corporate workforce, shedding more than 1,700 workers, including 15% of its senior management committee. It's the airline's first major layoff in more than half a century of operation. Southwest says in a statement it's trying to become a leaner, more agile organization. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, the Dow is now down about 125 points. This is NPR. The Energy Department has reversed the firings of many workers that it just sacked. The workers are responsible for overseeing the nation's nuclear weapons. Some employees say they were rehired within hours of being let go. Some members of Congress expressed alarm about mass layoffs at an agency that guards U.S. nuclear warheads and fights nuclear terrorism. A winter storm warning blankets much of Kentucky today, a few days after powerful storms raked the south. At least a dozen people died in Kentucky, one person was killed in West Virginia, and another person perished in Georgia. Mexican singer Paquita La Del Barrio has died at the age of 77. As NPR's Isabella Gomez Sarmiento reports, the singer was known as a voice of heartbreak and rage.
Paquita La Del Barrio, which informally translates to Paquita from the block, became a star in Mexico in the 1980s. She was beloved for the disdain with which she sang about the men who broke her heart.
Rata de dos patas.
Paquita said her music was inspired by her real relationships. For decades, her lyrics channeled her pain into feminist rage. In the hit Una Rata de Dos Patas, she famously compared an ex-lover to a cursed leech and a poisonous snake. Paquita La del Barrio's team announced her passing. No cause of death was given. Mexico City's Department of Culture issued a statement celebrating her, quote, unmistakable voice and unique style. Isabella Gomez Sarmiento, NPR News.
And I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News, from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from USPS. USPS Ground Advantage Service keeps customers in the know when their shipment leaves the dock, when it's on the move, and when it's delivered. Learn more at usps.com/in-the-know. This is NPR.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. An already tight timeline for the merger of the Livingston Manor-Roscoe school districts got tighter last week. Due to inclement weather, the Livingston Manor-Roscoe Board of Election, Education election, originally scheduled for last Thursday, February 13th, was postponed to this Thursday, February 20th. The new board will be tasked with making crucial decisions about the operations and policies of the unified district. Some of the key areas they will address before the new school year this fall include selecting an official district name, mascot, school colors, and determining grade configurations. Joining us now is John Evans, Livingston Manor and Roscoe Central Schools Superintendent. Good morning.
Morning. How are we doing?
Well, good. I guess Mother Nature's not doing you any favors with this tight timeline for the merger, but you needed to postpone it last week because of that weather. It's now taking place this Thursday. How's everybody preparing to handle this new election date? Any logistical challenges involved? I imagine there might be.
So, yeah, we're just hoping that the weather cooperates this week. Yeah. You know, everything this week is the same time that it was scheduled last week. So from noon to 8 in the Livingston Manor gym is the election. Absentee ballots are still available up until Wednesday at 5 p.m. They're due back the day of the vote by 5 p.m. But we're hoping Mother Nature cooperates this week and we can get through this.
I think we all are for the weather in general. There are 19 candidates running for 7 available seats on the board. Were you surprised by that turnout for the candidates?
Usually we're scrambling around to get people to run for the board. So it's great to see that there's, you know, so many community members in both the Livingston Manor and Roscoe communities that, you know, are willing to come out and, you know, serve on the board. So, no, we're excited to see the turnout and, you know, excited to get started working next week.
Let's talk a little bit about the election process for voters, specifically regarding absentee ballots. There's a deadline of the 19th. That's right. How can voters ensure they're able to cast their vote if they can't attend in person on the 20th?
So they can pick up an application for an absentee ballot and an absentee ballot up until Wednesday at 5 p.m. They're available at the main office in either building, the Roscoe building or the Livingston Manor building, and they would contact Marlon Peters, the district clerk, and she can get everyone set up with those absentee ballots if they need them.
All right. And I mentioned, you know, the timeline's kind of tight. This was just decided in December to merge the districts. You've got to get the school board together. Then you've got a back time from the fall. And the new board is going to play that significant role in shaping the future of the combined district, of course. What are some of the immediate priorities this new board will need to address once they're seated?
So one of the first things we have to tackle is an actual district name. Getting everything set up with the state education department, bank accounts, all of those things. We need a name. So by default, it's the Livingston Manor Roscoe Central School District. But if the board wants to do something else, they're going to need to do that pretty quick so we can get moving with all the rest of the stuff that we have to do.
And what are some of those other things that you have to do? I mean, it sounds like it almost sounds a little trivial to say, oh, we need a new name, but that's important because as you said, you have to register with the state. Everything has to get set up. You've got to get that going before you can do anything else. But what comes after that?
So yeah, once the name part comes in, there's a lot of legwork on the side of the districts, merging all of our student information systems, our financial systems, all of those things that are unique and individual to Roscoe and Livingston Manor now have to be combined into one. So there's a lot of work, on the part of the administration with that. Some other things that the board has to move on is how the buildings will be utilized, what the grade configuration in the two buildings will be. They have to negotiate contracts with the various unions. So we have to build a budget for the new school district, which will be voted on by on the budget vote in May. So there's quite a bit of stuff that's got to happen in a relatively short period of time.
Yeah, the district name, the grade configuration, even the mascot. Will people in the community be able to be involved in these decisions, and what would those opportunities be for public input?
Absolutely. We want the community and the students involved. I'm recommending to the board that they put together some advisory committees around each of those different tasks, the name, the mascot, the colors, building utilization, budget, all that kind of stuff, so that the community can work with the board in an advisory capacity to help kind of, guide that process for each of those different areas.
So back to the timeline, after the February 20th election this Thursday, there's an organizational meeting on the 25th, Tuesday, is that right? And then that is a hearing on tax exemptions. Explain what that's all about.
So it's two parts. The hearing on the tax exemption, so both Livingston Manor and Roscoe currently offer some local tax exemptions to the residents. Then, since Roscoe and Manor cease to exist, the new district, the new board has to reapprove those exemptions in the new district, so those people continue to, be eligible for those exemptions. So it's a hearing just to basically allow the community and the board to see which of those local exemptions are moving forward. Right now, we're not adding anything new. It's just all the existing. It's a veterans exemption and some other first responder type things, some things that have been in place for a little while. The meeting itself is to swear in the new board members and for them to begin actually, doing the work of the new district. And one of the things that they'll be acting on is those resolutions to reapprove those tax exemptions, in the new district.
So each district currently has their own, because there's a new district being formed. They have to then reformalize those and reapply for those, actually. There's a deadline, actually, of March 1st for that, to do that, so, in New York State?
Yeah, we're working with all of the local – people would contact their local assessor. Right now, it looks like – most of the assessors have the ability to roll that stuff over into the new district. But we're encouraging people that take advantage of these exemptions just to reach out to the assessor to make sure that they have everything that they need for all that stuff to roll over.
Got it. And again, the new school board elections coming up on the 20th. Can you just remind folks about the details of that, where they can go, when they can go, and what they need to know? Yeah.
So the vote is taking place at the Livingston Manor school building in the new gym. Polls open at noon, and they're open till 8 p.m.
And again, that absentee ballot, you can get that up until the day before if you're in the district.
Yes, through District Clerk Marlon Peters, or just contact the main office at either school, and we can walk people through how they can get all set up with that.
And before we go, what message would you like to share with the residents of Livingston Manor and Roscoe as they prepare to cast their votes in this important election?
We had a really good turnout when we voted on the merger. And, we'd like to see, that same kind of turnout as we take this next step and elect a board to lead the new district. So we're hoping for a good turnout.
That's John Evans, Livingston Manor and Roscoe Central Schools Superintendent, talking about the rescheduled Board of Election, Board of Education election, excuse me, for February 20th, this Thursday. No guarantees, Superintendent Evans, but the forecast for Thursday currently calls for cloudy and cold and a high of 20.
I'm keeping my fingers crossed that we can live with that.
All right. Thank you very much, and good luck.
All right. Thanks. Have a good one.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. And this winter has been particularly rough, including across the roads in New York State. There's a growing road salt shortage across New York. It's impacting municipalities, local hardware stores, and even private businesses. Amy Fierzel from the New York Public News Network reports.
It's been a snowy and consistently cold winter so far. Governor Kathy Hochul says these are the most challenging road conditions New York has seen in years. And that means lots of road salt.
I mean, this is the worst weather we've had in a long time, and sort of sustained cold that requires constant salt on the roads.
Because of that high demand, communities across the state are reporting difficulty procuring road salt. Syracuse.com reports that county, town, and village transportation departments in central New York are rationing salt. Some towns are only salting intersections and hilltops. In northern New York, several county highway departments reported delays in road salt deliveries. Edwards Adams is the highway superintendent for Franklin County.
Normally we would put in an order and it would be filled within the next week, and we are waiting when we do put in an order for a couple of weeks and getting one load at a time as opposed to one truck right after another. So it's definitely delayed.
He says the county's salt supply is in good shape because most of the time they use sand or sand cut with salt. But he says towns and municipalities are struggling with supply.
I've heard of many different towns struggling to get salt.
American Rock Salt, based in western New York, is the largest salt mine in the country and one of the main suppliers of salt for the state and the North Country. Earlier this month, it said in a statement that it had already mined and shipped out more salt this winter than in all of last winter. It says to meet increased demand, the company is dipping into its reserves and increasing daily production at the mine. Governor Hochul says the State Office of General Services is assisting municipalities with delivery delays. For the New York Public News Network, I'm Amy Fierzel.
And we'll take a break. When we come back, the documentary Join or Die, it examines the decline of civic engagement in America. We'll learn more about the film's central message that a healthy democracy depends on citizens' sense of connection to each other, and that depends on participation in organizations of all kinds, from churches to bowling leagues. You're listening to Radio Chatskill.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, independent grassroots global news. Our reporting includes breaking daily news headlines and in-depth interviews with people on the front lines of the world's most pressing issues. People speaking for themselves, providing unique and sometimes provocative perspectives on global events. Democracy Now!, weekdays at noon, right here on Radio Catskill.
I'm Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio, the National Association of Realtors has been described as somewhere between a monopoly and a mafia.
I take great offense at that characterization.
The NAR was recently sued for conspiring to inflate agent commissions.
It's just hard not to say, man, these prices seem way higher than they need to be.
That's next time on Freakonomics Radio. This afternoon at 1 o'clock on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On Saturday, the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance and Tustin Social are partnering to host an afternoon focused on civic engagement and community building. It's a free screening of the documentary Join or Die at Krauss Recital Hall as part of DVAA's Salon series. The documentary explores America's civic unraveling and features insights from prominent figures examining the challenges facing American democracy and offering potential solutions. Joining us now are Ariel Schanberg of DVAA and Greta Knutson of Tustin Social. Good morning.
Good morning, guys.
Great to be with you.
Thank you for being here. A very timely documentary, Ariel. What's inspired this collaboration with Tustin Social, and how do you think it's going to enhance the community's involvement in issues related to democracy and social connection?
We're, you know, so excited to be including this film as part of our Salon series. It actually came to our attention just prior to our launching the 2024 Big Eddie Film Festival. And we spoke with the filmmakers about trying to fit it into the Big Eddie Film Festival lineup. And we just felt that we wanted to include, make sure we included their participation and maximize the opportunity to bring the film to our community. So Greta, who had brought the film to my attention because of a screening that was done in Honesdale and presented by the Wayne County Community Foundation, we thought the Salon series this time of year, we had no idea what the world would be looking like post-election as it is. But it seems it was definitely a prescient call to include this in the Salon series and take an opportunity to invite the community, as we do with every Salon event, to gather around a cultural event, a cultural presentation, and think about process and what it means to be engaged in the arts and engaged with each other as a community.
Greta, why do you think it's important to have this conversation for the community, especially right now?
Well, I think that it's, you know, we're the connection is at the heart of everything that Tustin Social does. And one of the things, you know, this is a great opportunity when we're discussing this with Ariel and the DVAA team to be able to highlight and showcase what opportunities to join are in the community. So we're hosting immediately after the screening, the DVAA and Tustin Social are hosting what we're calling a community club mixer at the Big Eddie Brewing Company, where we're inviting local clubs, everything from, you know, Mahjong and knitting to the Narrowsburg beautification, to the library, the local libraries, to come and showcase sort of what these opportunities are because many people may not be aware of what's out there. We're going to be participating, pulling together a physical directory, so that we'll live digitally and as a printed directory of local clubs and groups, so that we make it hopefully we just will be making it easier for people to join and find people find their people, as it were, and be a joiner, which is really one of the central themes of the film.
Yeah, one of the central themes is joining and increasing volunteerism in the community. What role do you think that your organizations play in restoring these social connections and trust in that the documentary highlights?
Ariel, you want to go first?
I'm happy to. I think, organizations like DVAA and Tustin Social were founded very much informed, very much out of that desire to bring community together. In our case, it's through arts and cultural offerings and strengthening the whole cultural life of the region. When I look at what we do, I can also say that we couldn't do it without volunteer participation. Last year alone, DVAA benefited from nearly 3,000 hours of volunteer time. That was expertise, that was, backbone and sweat and muscle helping set things up like Riverfest. That was the work individuals on our board does. So each of these communities, you know, within the overall organization that get formed through all this volunteer work and participation really make the communities that we live in as viable and strong and connected as they are in ways that very few other types of, I think, institutions are able to do.
And because, go ahead, Greta.
Yeah, I think, Tustin Social, we were founded basically on a principle that, you know, just the idea that social and civic infrastructure is as important as roads and bridges. And we see ourselves very much as sort of helping to facilitate and build upon that social and civic infrastructure. So, for example, like our core programming, you know, we have these Set the Stage sessions. We have one coming up this Thursday that we partner with the DVAA and Growing Older Together. But, you know, it is an opportunity. We facilitate opportunities for local seniors to come together and meet and connect. We have youth programming that really serves the same purpose. And so I think, you know, we see ourselves as facilitators. We work on a collaborative partnership model. So really our goal is to just help strengthen some of that infrastructure that is really key and critical to how a community survives and thrives, frankly. I think it's pretty, you know, it's kind of as simple as that.
And, you know, Ariel, you mentioned that it wasn't planned necessarily knowing what was going to be going on with American democracy today, but it's a prescient programming note there. But so given these challenges that we're all kind of facing and dealing with now, how do you think this resonates with folks in this moment? And what do you think folks can do to actively contribute to their local communities in the short term with a film like this inspiring them?
Well, I think that the film and shows how will show just how long of a conversation this is. It focuses on the research of Robert Putnam and his book and project Bowling Alone, which I believe at this point now is about 50 years that he had ago he had started that research. And I think that, you know, having heard and seen the documentary and listened to interviews with him, you know, this is very much about finding commonality, very much a moment where we're looking to find the things that connect us, not divide us. And sometimes that can be through a passion for gardening or an interest in outdoor activities or a cultural subject matter or local history. And I know that Greta and I have had conversations where we've really said this is a time to make the place where we live the place we want the world to be. So I think this is an opportunity for folks to think about shaping their personal worlds, maybe offline, though there's a lot to be said and celebrated for online communities and what they do in terms of giving folks voice. But a chance to really build bridges and connections with your neighbors who hopefully from having those connections, you'll be able to call them your friends.
The documentary.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're talking about the documentary Join or Die at Krauss Recital Hall this Saturday at DVAA in partnership with Tustin Social as part of DVAA Salon Series. We're talking to Ariel Schamburg of DVAA and Greta Knutson of Tustin Social. You know, I think that the film focuses on America's civic unraveling, I guess you would say. But when you look at things locally in our communities, do you see that same unraveling, or do you see there are more strengths there and more contributions from the communities?
I can speak from my own, you know, experience here. Is that I found that the work, just personally, that I have done in, you know, working with and amongst the community, has been enormously restorative and in terms of my own hope for humanity, which sounds, you know, it's I think there's a when we do come together and work together in whatever, whether it's around gardening or whatever, it makes it strengthens connections, and it makes it much less easy to be in conflict with one another. And as I say, to some of the work that we've done in the 18 months that we've been in existence as an organization, I feel hopeful. And a lot of that is that it's very hard to feel like what you can do and what you can how you can impact what's happening on a macro level in terms of, you know, politics and whatever. But if you are, we can have an impact on what's immediately in front of us and how we contribute hyper-locally. And that has power. I think it has enormous power.
Yeah, I don't want to sound Pollyannish about it, but it does feel like we're inundated at the national level, global level. Things are definitely changing. But in a local level, I personally, from my perch here at our, you know, community radio station, see people changing and evolving on their own to be more civically engaged. And it's an evolution in some ways. And then you guys are also helping just, you know, promote that evolution. Ariel, would you agree?
I do. And I get accused of being Pollyannish as well sometimes. It's what initially, even, you know, 8 years ago drew me to these communities here in Sullivan, Catskills and the Upper Delaware Valley region is just how willing our citizenry was to engage with each other, either informally or formally through some type of civic group, to address problems, to celebrate each other, to create safe spaces, and to ensure that all were given agency. And in ways that I hadn't seen, you know, I'm not going to mention the counties, but where in other places where I lived in upstate New York. And I can only be hopeful that what we are doing here in our region is trickling up.
Yeah, and like, and I don't want to say everything is rosy everywhere. You know, there's definitely some problems, but it seems as if we are finding new ways to connect and build this community, especially through programs like this. So, what is your hope for the community in terms of ongoing engagement after this event? How can DVAA and Tustin Social continue to build on this momentum generated by the screening, the mixer, the conversation we're having?
Well, I think one of the things we are, one of the idea of as facilitators to be able to, sort of showcase, like, so one of the directory, the sort of printed directory that we're looking to build, through this weekend is, we're looking to, throughout the region. So from sort of basically from Hancock to Port Jervis, to from Honesdale, Hawley, sort of over to Bethel, sort of roughly geographically, of like what is on offer, so that at least then making it, hopefully in some degree, making it easier for people to connect and find their people, you know, whatever their interests may be, because I think that just sometimes just finding for what's available and can be and feel a bit hit and miss. So that's something that we're hoping, sort of like a tactical contribution that we're looking to provide.
And Ariel, what about DVAA in terms of the lens of the community arts organization?
On a number of factors and levels, I think certainly our programming of inclusive programming and themed programming will be something that we want to see folks gather for and build communities out of it. I think also just keeping in mind DVAA as the Arts Council for Sullivan County and our regranting opportunities is we want folks to know that if they have a project, an opportunity to bring folks together that they're working on, that we're a source of funding and support for that. We just recently closed out our 2025 Arts for Sullivan grant cycle, and it was really inspiring. Not only did we have a record number of submissions, but really the way different communities were artists and makers and businesses and nonprofits were coming together to create opportunities for folks to gather, to explore shared interests, was vaster and more dynamic than I had seen it in the 7 years that I've been at DVAA. And that's really exciting. So our hope certainly in connection with the guide and the resources that Greta spoke about is to help provide means and opportunities for folks to do that kind of activity.
Before we go, for each of you, what do you think makes this particular event special in terms of bringing together the community, local organizations, folks who might not typically interact?
Well, I think it's an exciting opportunity simply because so we've got so many great clubs and great groups in our area, and it's exciting to be able to perhaps introduce or expose people who might otherwise not be aware of that to new opportunities for them to, you know, to get involved in the in their own local community.
Ariel?
You know, this is a film that if you wanted, you could just log into Netflix now and watch it. But we really believe in the value and impact of people coming together to experience something together. So even though the film is readily available on various streaming sources, it was important that we create an opportunity for folks to not only see the film, not only see the film and meet people within their community, but we're thrilled to have Rebecca Davis, one of the filmmakers, joining us for a virtual Q&A after. So it's going to give the audience an opportunity to really hear from somebody who dedicated a significant portion of their time to exploring this topic, engaging with Robert Putnam, and then actualize on it. And how many times, you know, do we see a movie, a documentary that really inspires us and then be able to walk just down the street and commit ourselves to some of those exciting perspectives and calls to action that the film we saw called for, and, you know, have it at a great local business that we're so appreciative of welcoming us for this. And also, I just have to acknowledge the Wayne County Community Foundation, who's serving as a sponsor for the event and has encouraged, so strongly encouraged us to bring the film back to the area.
Yeah, and that sense of connectedness that you're not going to get at home alone in front of your TV or computer. We have been talking with Ariel Schamburg from Delaware Valley Arts Alliance and Greta Knutson of Tust and Social. They're joining forces to bring you the free screening of Join or Die, a documentary at Krauss Recital Hall in Narrowsburg, New York, this Saturday at 2 as part of the DVAA's Salon Series. And then afterward, there is a community mixer at Big Eddie Brewing Company at 4. There's more information at DelawareValleyArtsAlliance.org and more information about Tust and Social at TustandSocial.org. Ariel and Greta, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, Moving Toward Health with Coach Maggie Fitzpatrick. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
This is Ira Glass. On This American Life, sometimes we just show up somewhere, turn on our tape recorders, and see what happens.
If you can't get 7 cars in 12 days, you got to look yourself in the mirror and say, holy, what, are you kidding me?
Like at this car dealership, trying to sell its monthly quota of cars, and it is not going well.
I just don't want one balloon to a car. Balloon the whole freaking place so it looks like a circus.
Real life stories every week.
This American Life, Saturday night at 6 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Every Tuesday, Maggie Fitzpatrick joins us for her conversation about her health and wellness column in the Sullivan County Democrat called Moving Toward Health. Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
And your column this week, you're talking about the mind-body connection. You're talking about this mental health part of things. And again, I always like to ask what, you know, inspired you. What's your inspiration for this topic?
Well, I was actually thinking about an event I'll be at on Friday.
We'll talk about that, yeah.
Yeah, and so I'll be at an event teaching some classes on how to, you know, just ideas of exercising with no equipment. And I was thinking about, you know, just what goes into exercising with no equipment and getting yourself to do that. And it made me think about the mind-body connection and how valuable our bodies are as a tool to change the way that we feel mentally.
You talk about mental stress that can lead to physical illnesses and vice versa. Talk a little bit about that and how we can break that cycle.
Yeah, we know that this is real, right? Yeah. We know this is real at this point where when we are experiencing stress mentally, it can manifest itself into physical illnesses, right? You can experience trauma that comes out physically. You can experience anything that we deal with mentally can manifest into a physical illness. And if that is true, if we can experience illness that goes both ways, right? If we're dealing with something physically, it can put us, you know, into struggles mentally and the other way, then the opposite must be true, where wellness in one can facilitate wellness in the other, right? And for me, I think that the most valuable use of that pathway is when I'm struggling mentally, I can use my physical body to help.
I want to ask you about some of your favorite techniques for relieving stress, some physical activity, some of which we might think of automatically, exercise, walking. But here's one that's very interesting and can be very powerful, deep belly breathing. That's one of your go-tos.
Yeah, the breath is so interesting, and it is one of the only functions in our body that happens by itself, and we can control it, right? Your heart rate, you can't control that, right? It just does what it feels like it needs to do. All of
you try
the
to lower it through breathing.
You can try. Yes, you can try. But the breathing is the mechanism,
the one thing, right?
The breathing is the mechanism. And so I love using the breath because if we can intentionally take a big breath, right, where we push the air all the way down into our stomach as far as we can, what that does is it signals our parasympathetic nervous system to turn on. So this is the rest and digest. This is the settle down side of our nervous system. And if we can trigger that to turn on, then we release all of the right hormones for our bodies to settle, right? And to start to be less worked up, less anxious.
Is that why it's so effective? Like you're controlling like things at a cellular structure or level?
Yeah. So it's all connected, right? So physically, then we're talking to the neurological system, right? Which is then talking to all of the cells. And so it's all connected, and the breath is the one thing. Well, not just one, but it is one very powerful thing that we have control over physically, which then can talk in the language all of the other body systems understand, right? I wish I could just think to my brain and say, okay, stop thinking now, you know, but it doesn't work like that.
Pause. Please pause.
Yeah.
You talk about the importance of intentional action in this column this week. What does that mean in the context of mind-body wellness? And how could someone incorporate that practice?
I'm sure you experience this, but if I don't feel well, if I'm feeling sad, if I'm feeling feelings of depression or anxiousness, the last thing I want to do is move my body, right? It's the last thing that I want to do. And it's the most powerful thing that I can do to change my state, right? And so we have to be very intentional about getting ourselves to move and choosing what we are going to do. So that way we can experience the benefits, right? Because if we allow the way that we feel to control what we do, then we will just continue to perpetuate the same state that we're currently in, right? So we have to break that cycle. We have to do something different than how we're currently feeling and how those feelings are telling us what we should do, right? We have to do something different than that. And the only way we can do that is if we intentionally choose, right? If I let my brain determine what I'm going to do based off of how it feels, I will continue to feel the same way.
For those who might feel overwhelmed by this idea of like a, you know, full workout, a lengthy exercise routine, we talked about this before, but in the context of physical movement to help with mental health, what are some things that you would say to someone who's kind of hesitant about incorporating that?
Two things I really like to do that have a lower barrier to entry, I like to say, right? It's a little easier to get started. One is stretching, right? So if you're sitting, you're laying down, you can start to do that right where you are. You don't even have to change your physical location, right? And then the other one is walking. and we could walk inside, we can walk outside, you can go somewhere specific to walk, you can walk right out your door, you know, it doesn't matter where you do it. But those two things are, you're not doing a full workout, right? You're not changing your outfit and preparing your water and all these things. We're just starting to move our body, and they can help us start to change that mental state. It's an easier way to do it.
And you mentioned you're going to be teaching some classes, some wellness sessions at the Monticello Rotary Health and Wellness Fair. That's coming up this week. Let's talk a little bit about what folks could expect at these sessions and the Health and Wellness Fair with Monticello Rotary.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this. It's at Resorts World Catskill, and I will be teaching 2 30-minute sessions, one in the morning and one in the early afternoon. Both of them will be exactly the same. And the topic is no equipment, no problem. And so we'll be doing a little bit of movement. And my goal is to inspire you and to not only, you know, give you a workout there, but hopefully give you some ideas of things that you can do when you don't have access to a gym, when you do feel overwhelmed about, you know, all of the structure of exercise. I want to decrease that barrier of entry for you and help you start to have ideas of how you can move without, you know, all the extra fluff.
Where can folks get more details on your sessions and also the Monticello Health and Wellness Fair? Rotary's Health and Wellness Fair.
I know there's some info about it in the Democrat. So if you go look there, I am not very well prepared to answer this question, truthfully, but I can get you some more info if you would like to share it later.
I'm looking up the MonticelloRotary.org has some more information too. So
okay, perfect.
That. Yeah. So and, that.
Yeah.
You're ready. You're focused on no equipment, no problem.
Yeah, exactly. I will be talking about it a little bit on my social media. Instagram is the best place to find me. I'm at Maggie Fitzpatrick.
And the Monticello Rotary Health and Healthy Heart Health and Wellness Fair is part of the 47th annual Heartathon, and that is taking place this coming. This week, here it is. I'm trying to find the 21st. Sorry.
We got to search Friday. For all the
info. Yeah, I found it. It's like, wait, it's here. So again, you can find more information about those sessions that are going to be happening with Maggie Fitzpatrick and others in the community at MonticelloRotary.org. Finally, before we go, what's one piece of advice you'd offer to some folks who are just like maybe struggling with this whole idea, especially winter, ice, wind, snow? I can't do it. But you did focus on a couple of things that are within your control. You can breathe and, mm-hmm. and kind of start there, and you could even just walk around the house.
Exactly. Just start moving your body and allow the movement to change your state. It's easy to fight it, right? It's easy to fight it, but just be open to the fact that it can help change the way you feel.
Maggie Fitzpatrick is the health and wellness columnist for the Sullivan County Democrat. Her column is Moving Toward Health, and it appears every Tuesday in the paper or at scdemocratonline.com. And again, she'll be at that Monticello Rotary Healthy Heart Health and Wellness Fair, February 21st at Resorts World. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Take a break. And when we come back, we're going to learn more about the Art Sisters. This is Radio Chatskill.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, host of On Point. Each hour of On Point is a journey to help make complicated issues understandable. Every issue brings more questions, like how did we get here? Why is this happening? And what does it mean? And how do we fix it? So let's figure this out and make sense of the world together. Join me weekday mornings at 11 here on Radio Catskill.
On the next Radiolab.
The plane started rotating.
They were going 168 miles an hour.
Whoa.
How a plane crash in Nebraska.
Boom. Everything exploded.
And a team of local doctors.
Neurosurgeons.
Urologists.
EMTs. Nurses.
Gave us the modern ER.
Versed.
Neat.
Us Nebraskans are kind of like that.
1, 2, 3.
That's on the next Radiolab. Wednesday at 1 on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Arts Nest is featuring a collaborative exhibition featuring local artists Abby Alzamora and Heather Lockwood, running now through May 31st. It's an immersive show exploring the magic of creativity and artistic partnership. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi spoke to Heather and Abby, who call themselves the Art Sisters, along with curator Jody Sibilia.
Good morning to you, ladies. Heather, Abby,
and Jody, and they're here to talk about an event that's coming up on February 23rd from 1:30 to 3:30, an exhibit at the Arts Nest in Lake Huntington. There's also an artist talk, so they have a lot to talk about. Jody, can you tell us the name of the exhibit?
Imaginative Interlude.
And what inspired this exhibit?
It's a collaborative exhibition with Abby and Heather, and what inspired this was truly the way that both of their works and their bodies of work work together in such a playful and colorful composition. I thought as the curator that it would make sense that both of them come together, and then it was just so amazing to find out that they have had some conversations in the past and consider themselves art sisters. So once that all came together, it just made sense to put them together in a collaborative exhibition.
So the art sisters, okay, how did this come to happen, Abby?
Well, we met each other over at Bethel Woods at an open house for teaching artists, and I just saw her awesome outfit, and she was wearing the best earrings, and I just knew, I was like, we're going to be friends. And, you know, from then, we've just, you know, had a great relationship, worked together on some different projects, and it's been fantastic.
Wow. So that was serendipity.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure.
And how does your work complement each other?
I would say our work complements each other. We're very playful when we work. We like to work with a lot of different materials, a lot of recycled materials. We're both kind of use what you have artists. But we like to kind of work in the way of that there's a mysterious meaning behind the work. There's a message. There's always things hidden in our paintings also, which is always kinds of make our paintings kind of a seek and find in weird ways. But as far as working together, our work is very, we both don't mix colors. We usually use colors straight from the bottle, and we're both very vibrant and bright workers. So, I think working together, it was a great mix of our collaging skills and mark making to create some really cool pieces.
And what did you teach at Bethel Woods?
I was a teaching artist. I taught for the play program, which is their summer camp program. And then I also taught the fine arts program, which is their older kids.
And Abby?
I also taught in the play program with ages, 5 to 6 and 7 to 9. So that was a very fun experience. And then I worked a few of the festivals they had over there, as well as the Harvest Festival, doing crafts like macrame and, you know, projects like that.
So you're experienced in a lot of different media.
Oh, yeah. I love getting my hands in everything. I love trying new things. I it's so exciting to explore a new medium.
Do you use found objects, either of you?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. We're big collectors. So when we worked on our collaborative pieces together, we literally took out bags and were like, this is what I got, and dumped them out on the floor and was picking through and choosing things. Yeah. So we're definitely a found object. We like to recycle stuff, though.
So you play well together.
Yeah, exactly.
You really do. Mm-hmm. It does sound playful and enjoyable, because who wouldn't like to kind of just dump a bag of stuff out there and see what you can make with it?
That's right. Oh, yeah. And that's what we're looking forward with the exhibit. You know, it's very playful and it's interactive also. So we have some pieces that people can interact with and play with, and materials that they can play with while they're there.
Wonderful. Jody, is there anything else you would like to add?
Oh, I think that the exhibit makes a lot of sense in the space at the Arts Nest, because it's also a music venue, and it's open weekly for open mics and local musicians that come in on Saturday for concerts. So it's really a creative hub, and this particular exhibit is really interesting because of the playful and unique nature of it, the way that it's so engaging for many audiences. It's a beautiful, a collaborative piece that makes sense as a whole and also engages many different audiences when they come in to not only view the performances. We're crossing over between our performance art and our fine art exhibit, and I think that that's the best point of this entire thing.
Anything else you would like to add, Abby?
Well, for me, you know, it's the imaginative interlude, it's really big for us because we started off with a name, you know, surrounding play. That was where we started. And then we, you know, Jody, Heather, and I all worked through it together and narrowed it down to imaginative interlude because it's all about slowing down and being in the moment, you know, looking at the world through a different eye and, you know, seeing these found objects and seeing the beauty in something that someone may have discarded and giving it new life.
Heather.
I 100% agree. It's about slowing down. It's a lot. It's about looking at the everyday object and seeing how everyday objects can be really special and have their own moments to shine. It's kind of like Abby and I.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, wonderful. Wonderful. Well, I'm sure this will be a lot of fun.
It will.
So just a reminder, Imaginative Interlude at the Arts Nest will be presented on February 23rd, a Sunday, from 1:30 to 3:30, and there will be an artist talk as well. So thank you all for coming in and participating.
Thank you, Valerie.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you. So happy to be here.
That's culture reporter Valerie Manzi speaking to local artists Abby Alzamora and Heather Lockwood and their curator Jody Sevilla from The Arts Nest. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. But before we go, we want to give you an update on something we told you about last week. For over 40 years, the Sullivan County Conservation Club has presented the area's premier ice fishing contest, the King of the Ice. It was held on February 16th in White Lake in coordination with the White Lake Fire Company. Overall attendance was down due to those less than perfect weather conditions you may have experienced on Sunday, but almost 200 dedicated anglers still participated for the chance to bring in the big one and earn the title of king. And the winner of this year's King of the Ice trophy was Mark Brennan, who landed a 4.5-pound, 22-inch trout. Congratulations to Mark. And also want to mention the youth winners. First place for the trout catch, Mackenzie Smith. First place, pickerel, Kylie Curry. And first place, perch, Aurora Boyles. Congratulations to all of those folks who participated in the King of the Ice tournament. You can see pictures from the contest at Sullivan County Conservation Club's Facebook page. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.
Radio Catskill supporters include Sullivan Catskills Visitors Association, SullivanCatskills.com, Catskill Brewery, brewing ales, lagers, and mixed fermentation beers in a LEED Gold certified building, plus a food truck and beer garden at Exit 96 off Route 17 in Livingston Manor, CatskillBrewery.com, and listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
This week on This American Life. Not long ago, Zach's father called to warn him that the country's power grid was about to be wiped out.
I know, I know it sounds like conspiracy theory, but
he believes a lot of conspiracy theories. Zach has trouble getting him to see the facts. And then they figured out a way to settle their arguments once and for all. See eye to eye, have a shared reality. That's this week.
This American Life, Saturday night at 6 on Radio Catskill.
I'm Kuzo Grace, KG, doing African-American history during the month of February. Black History Month was originally created to fight ignorance and to prevent the continuation of misconception about black people and their history. So I'll be doing presentations on black history from then until now. So please check me out Tuesday on The Music Emporium.
You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's forecast, no weather advisories or watches or warnings, just cold weather. We're in a cold snap for a few days, brisk and bitterly cold today, high of 16. Tonight, cold flurries late, low of 4, only getting up to 19 tomorrow. Frigid conditions continue tomorrow night with a low of 4. Slightly warmer Thursday, high 20. Friday's high 23, and we'll warm up to a tropical 32 for Saturday. Clouds and sun expected, partly sunny on Sunday as well, with a high of 33.
Support comes from Sullivan 180, building healthy communities through people, places, and policy, one degree at a time. More information at Sullivan180.org. From The River Reporter, the community newspaper covering four counties in Pennsylvania and New York along the Upper Delaware River. RiverReporter.com. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming online at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.